the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And in this series, we are going to be doing auto-battler games, starting with Challengers. And you might be wondering, what's an auto-battler game?
Yeah, what is an auto-battler?
Yeah, I have actually not played too many auto-battlers as video games. Does someone want to explain what that is?
Yeah, so in video games, auto-battlers are games where your characters fight without you really giving any input. They just sort of go into battle and automatically fight their opponent, and then they win or lose. And then in between battles, you might change things around, like you might reorder them in some sort of roster, or you might equip new things to them to make them stronger, or you might substitute in new fighters. But basically, the battles play out without input from the player.
So it's all about the kind of pre-game decision-making and like analyzing how you should be flowing.
Exactly.
And then you send it all off and it all automatically resolves, and then you come back and keep.
Yeah, and like you often watch the battles resolve. Right. So like you see what's happening, but you aren't actively making any choices in video games.
Yeah, and so we were thinking about, what could we do in the board game space for auto-battlers? And Challengers was my pick because I think it's a cool game. And someone described it as war, but with some decisions in between, which I think is pretty close.
It is, but I think that's also a disservice to the game, too. But we can get into that,
too. Yeah. So how it works, players start with a starting deck, much like another deck builder game. You have some basic cards that are numbers 1 through 4 in your starting deck. Yep. With sometimes they have abilities, but not. I think the basic ones don't have any
basic
abilities.
Don't have
just
abilities.
Numbers.
Yep.
There's essentially it's a one-on-one battle, but the cool thing about Challengers is you can do like this tournament format with more players where you swap who you're playing with. And you see at the end who gets the most points for their victories. And where the decisions come in is there's decks that you pull from to upgrade your deck. So you draw 5, decide to add, at the beginning you add 2 from this, the first tier of cards. There's A deck, B deck, and C deck. And in the first round you get to add 2 from the A deck, which are low-powered, but they're better than your starting deck.
Yeah, like the starting cards, except they have powers typically attached to them.
Yeah, and there's also like 6 different color, I guess, factions that you can that are mixed in with this, and often the factions work well together, that kind of thing. But so you take 2, shuffle them into your deck, then you can also decide to remove any number of cards. So you could get rid of your 1s. There's advantages for getting rid of those or sometimes for keeping them, depending on the strategy you want to go for. But then once you have your deck ready, you basically put out your first card from the top of the deck. The other player tries to match or beat that number. And they have to keep playing cards until they hit your number.
They all add
defender.
Together the ones that you're playing.
Yep. And then whichever card is last played, once you beat that number, my card that I'm defending with goes to my bench. And there's 6 slots on the bench, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then your card, whichever last was played, is put on top. And so say like I have a 4 and Trevor had to attack me with 1, 2 and then another 2 or something.
Sure.
The 2 stays on top. Now the 2 is Trevor's defender.
Yep.
And I just have to beat a 2.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's more to it than that, but that's basically how the play works. And then the round ends when either you fill up your entire bench and you can't play anymore. Or you don't have any cards left in your deck. So that's kind of the, I guess, counter to removing the too many cards from your deck. Then you'll lose that way. But yeah, it's really tight game and pretty cool.
Yeah, you want to have a lot of cards so you don't run out of cards, but you don't want to have too many different types of cards, otherwise you'll fill your bench.
Yeah.
And did you say that if you have the same type of card, the bench can kind of soak those up? So if you have like those, you start off with three one attack cards, but they're all the same name and they all fit in one spot on the bench.
Which is interesting because this is a common mechanic in a lot of video game auto battlers where you want to collect things of the same type, often because then you can merge them into one stronger thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of reflected here in how multiples of the same card are great because they only take up one slot on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool. What were some of the most fun cards you guys got?
Oh.
I mean, there was a lot of good ones. I had the cowboy, which had an attack of three. But then if it took the flag, I believe, then it caused the opponent to discard the top of their deck and put it onto their bench, which is brutal because that means I don't get to use that card and it fills the bench slot. So, yeah, like,
that one was awful.
It's brutal, but hard to kick off in later games.
Yeah, I had the butler. I think a lot of us took that one because it's
I never got the butler.
Right. Well, it's pretty good because it lets you clear two cards from your bench,
mm-hmm.
Which can let you have a bigger diversity of cards. I also tried the escape pod, which I thought would be really cool because it can potentially let you get a card from the next tier early if the escape pod is your defender. But it's so hard to trigger that.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to get it in time and did not turn out very well. But yeah, there's... Yeah.
I think I referenced Challengers long ago in the deck building series.
Oh, sure.
When we were talking about like the next evolution of deck building.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I realized that a lot of deck building is kind of auto battling. Like you make a few decisions, but usually like in Dominion, for example, it doesn't exactly matter until you have a draw a card in as an action, because otherwise you know what's in your hand, you're going to play everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't...
As long as you have the action economy for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I guess, and deciding what you want to buy is usually the main strategic decision in deck builders.
So I actually... I'm not sure I see this as a deck builder. I think I see it more as a game that incorporates deck construction into the game. Because in deck builders, usually when you buy cards, it's while you're playing through your deck, right? They go in your discard pile. It's sort of a continuous thing.
You have some kind of resource that you use to purchase cards, and that's managing that resource.
Right, and this game is more like the more traditional sense of deck building as you would see in, say, collectible card games, where you have your collection of cards and you're, you know, putting cards into your deck, and then you're going to go test out your deck and see how well it does. And this game takes that whole cycle of... you know, from CCGs, of adjusting your deck and then testing it out. And it compresses it within the span of a single game.
Yeah.
You're making these adjustments to your deck and seeing how they do. And it's pretty amazing. Like, I can't think of another game that captures that experience within the game.
The only thing I have is Millennium Blades, which is a little bit older now, but it's also more involved. You're like, you actually go buy booster packs and you have like a whole mechanic around the trading card game world. But this is just so
streamlined. You're buying booster packs
in
the game?
In the game. Because it's like you are going to tournaments and you are like doing stuff. And so this is much more just like, you know, it's almost like not a draft, but, you know, draw five, pick two. And then you're like just picking those two. There's no cost to them. They're all roughly balanced based on abilities and attack strength and rarity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, oh yeah, you just kind of go through it and it's just so fast.
And I think, yeah, from what you've said, I would certainly like to try Millennium Blades. I think, I mean, this experience, the fantasy of a construct or a customizable card game is a really compelling fantasy. Like I remember... you know, back when I was playing a lot of Mage Wars, just theorizing around different decks and trying things out. And that's really appealing. But the reality of trying to do that often has many barriers.
Sure.
So seeing games like this that take that whole fantasy of, you know, going around and adjusting your decks and trying them out and playing tournaments.
Right.
Because this game is basically a tournament built into the game.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
We played with five players and had seven games total. I don't know how long it took us to play those seven games, but feel like under that an long. Hour.
Yeah. Each round is like 5 minutes if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And on that note, too, with odd numbers of players, since we had five, we played against a robot deck, which actually works really well.
It got progressively harder and harder.
The main mechanic that makes that work is there's one card in there called the Cyborg. That
has four duplicates.
Yep, and its value is equal to the round number. So round one, it's one, and two, it's two, and so on up to seven. And that was really fun to try to plan against because... Yeah. You know it's coming.
Well, and also, I think the way that AI works in this game is brilliant for a number of reasons. I mean, we've probably talked about game AIs before, I would
think. Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
But one of the things about game AIs is you want to minimize the amount of upkeep for the players.
Yeah.
For the AI. And this game does a great job because, first of all, it's an auto battler. Right. So the game is already basically set up to have you automatically do things. So resolving the AI's actions is super easy. It's like exactly the same way as a human would resolve their actions, except, of course, none of the AI's cards require any choices.
Right.
But then the fact that they... I mean, you know, I can imagine a world where in between rounds you would add cards to the AI deck, and that would be an extra step.
And that might be part of the solo experience, too. I could see.
Yeah, I think there is a solo deck.
Yeah, for the too, solo but, mode. Yeah. But challengers.
But the fact that the card just scales based on the round number means there is no setup for the AI deck in between rounds. You just play against it.
You shuffle it, play it again.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's probably one of the best game AIs I have seen.
So simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'll just say my takeaway, I think, is the tournament format for this because I really enjoy a lot of two-player games, but I don't really bust them out very often because game nights are usually five or six players, and this is the only time you get to have the two-player experience. Now, of course, this works better because there's the rounds are so quick,
right?
But I'd love to see more of that where it's like just the swapping of players, and they have, you know, like you set up three or four mats, or no, I guess just three mats.
Well, we had three mats. I think there are four mats.
Yep. And it's cool. I want to see more games that try that.
Yeah. And also the way that they handle,
who's fighting who,
I think is really cool because you're each given a card. And the card is basically your round pairings.
Yep.
But not by player, but by location.
Yeah.
Which is very much like you might do it in a real tournament, right? It's like, oh, okay, for round two, you're going to this room.
And table 36.
Table 36, okay, yeah. So in this game, it's just each round, okay, which color mat do I go to? And then somebody else will be going to the same mat. And obviously, you know, they've done some sort of tournament math behind the scenes to get all of these to work out, but I think it's a very elegant way to represent a tournament.
Yeah,
and it makes it very easy to find where you need to go.
It reminded me of like a dance card from like going to balls and things. You know, oh, that's on my dance card. You know, who am I dancing with next?
Oh, is that a thing? I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah, dance card. That's a whole thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Dance card.
Huh? Everyone puts their name in on there.
I don't know exactly how it works, but I do know that dance cards are absolutely a thing.
Okay.
I've heard it referenced several times.
Oh, like what era?
Good question. I think like it probably got its start around like that, you know, Victorian ball concept, but I might be wrong about that. It might be because people reference it for weddings and things and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
My dance card is full. Sorry.
Someone should make a game like if there's not one.
There might be a dance card game.
Hmm.
That might be what reminded me of it too.
So, one thing I notice about this game, which we've seen a couple of in a couple of other games, is victory points are random. So like when you win a match, you get a trophy, and the trophy is worth some number of points, which goes up over the course of the game. So later rounds are more valuable. But the amount of points on that trophy is
unknown.
It's random, and you know we've seen this in a few places, like in Sprocket Forge. Favors gave a random number of points, although you had a way to get rid of the low value ones.
And did the person know what their points were on the favor cards?
Yeah.
So this one, the player didn't even know, technically. I don't think.
I think you might have been allowed to look at them. Not sure.
I never did.
Well, that's because the other game we played that had this, of course, was Spooktacular.
Oh, yes.
Where the tickets, you're not allowed to look at them.
That's right.
And I guess, how do you guys feel about random victory points here?
I like not being able to track exactly where everyone is, because if you have a runaway leader, then you really, like, you kind of don't want to know that for sure.
Yeah.
It is hard, though, if you only have, like, a couple trophies that are, like, ones and twos. It's like, okay, I don't have many points. And that was me for most of the game until I finally started winning halfway through and got, like, the last three trophies in a row.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, great, okay.
And the final trophies are worth more in quite a bit more, actually. It goes from, like, round one might be worth 2 points to the last round might be worth 10 points. So, which is good, I think. That helps people feel like they can still be in the game at the end. But it is funny thinking about, like, wow, that first round didn't matter all that much.
Right.
But it makes sense with the theme of the game. It's like, oh, okay, I'm refining my deck. You're trying to make your deck better and better to really win in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that there are a lot of advantages to having hidden points.
Yeah.
So that players aren't as confident whether they've won or lost.
And not as focused on the points, too, I think. Which is kind of funny. Like, you're not obsessed with how many points you have currently. Right. Just how many trophies you have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the counterpoint that, you know, when you show people games with random points, one of the things that they complain is, oh, okay, so, you know, we could do the same thing. You know, we could achieve the same thing, but you're randomly rewarded more than I am.
Right.
I mean, I think it feels fine in this game, and I'm wondering, like, what is the ingredient that makes it okay to have random points?
It might be the number of, like, trophies that are out there, because ultimately you'll have 7 rounds, so if you have at least half of the trophies, you've won at least around half of your battles.
Sure.
Yeah. If it was a game that only had 3 trophies and those were random, that would feel much worse. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. So, like, over time, it sort of evens out. So
I think so.
So if you want to use random points, you just need to make sure that there are lots and lots of
opportunities for it. Right. So you feel like it would average out over time, right? Like, okay, I got a +1 here, a -1 there. Technically, I ended up at the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes sense.
I mean, I think randomness for human psychology is interesting, too, just because, you know, if there is elements of randomness, people can blame it on that and not feel like it was their fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, this game is a lot of randomness, of course, because you're just
flooded with
shuffle your deck, see what happens.
It also means during the game you can imagine that you're winning, because like no one knows what's on the token, so you imagine that your tokens are really good. And your opponent imagines that your tokens are really bad and theirs are really good.
Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. You think you don't have very good tokens, so you have to get more, so you're more motivated to try and get more tokens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, people like to tell themselves a story where
that's true.
They have a path to victory, right? And it adds
they're the underdog.
Yeah. And this adds some more plausibility to that. So I think random points seem pretty good, I think.
What takeaways you guys got?
I did have it solidly in my mind 5 seconds ago, and then it completely went fluttering away. I was hoping if I talked a little bit that it would come back to me. It did not come back to me.
I mean, I can go. I think I know what my takeaway is. You know, when I was thinking about Auto Battlers in the past, I guess both video game and board game, one thing I thought is, okay, so you make all the choices in between the games, and during the game, there's no choices. But that's not quite the case in this game. There are some choices during the rounds, and a lot of them are pretty trivial. But, you know,
yeah, I had quite a few cards that let me look at the cards, put one on the bottom or on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And often you can just sort of math out what the best thing is for you. But I think the bigger point is that auto battlers, and particularly auto battlers in board games, do not need to be 100% free of choice.
Right.
That doesn't mean you need choices all the time, but a couple choices here and there are kind of a nice accent to the rest of the game. Most of the game can be no choices.
Right.
And even if you just have a few choices here and there, it does make people feel like they have a lot more agency.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, like a 10% choices feel like, I don't know, 50%. I'm making up numbers here. But the point is the amount of agency you feel for the few choices that you have during the game, it feels a lot greater than the actual ratio would suggest.
Like, I had an ability on a card that allowed me to look at the top three cards of my deck and put them back in any order. That is huge if you want things to play out in a specific way, or you have a specific card that you want to fight against the thing that's out there now. Like, it has a lot of different utility options. Like, wait, this one choice, just rearranging these three cards feels hugely impactful.
Yeah, and I guess my takeaway is mainly that you only need that to happen once or twice in an encounter or in a combat for it to feel like you're making significant choices. And the rest of the combat can just be completely random stuff determined by the cards.
Yeah. I think this game takes advantage of the fact that people like being scientists.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
ooh, let's pour a little bit of this in, a little bit of that.
Yeah, and it feels like, oh, I made this whole deck, and I get, every time I play a card, it's like, ooh, yes, I planned this out. And really, it's not...
Oh, good, that worked out in that order.
Yeah,
perfect.
You didn't really do that much, but you benefit from, like... We've said in the past, like, well, one of the things you've been talking about, Ananda, lately is like linear rewards. I'm going to butcher how you were talking about it, but like some games feel like you're doing a lot of work for very little reward.
Yeah.
This feels like you're doing hardly any work for like a
fun... I chose two cards and discarded another card. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah. For a fun, like 5-minute little battle.
Right.
You did a couple things.
Yeah.
And you get to play it out and see what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other aspect in this game specifically that there are a couple different things, but one really big one that feeds into my ideas about nonlinear rewards, basically that you should be able to get a lot of reward for a small amount of effort relative to what you expect, is the way that battles work.
Yeah.
Because the really cool thing about battles in this game for me is that, okay, you know, you need to beat your opponent's card, so you're going to flip a bunch of cards until they sum up, but then the last card is the one that defends. So depending completely on the order, like drawing a 4 and then a 1 is way, way worse than drawing a 1 and then a 4 if you're trying to beat a 5.
Right. Yep.
And so... And you very naturally end up with these scenarios where you are where you can be extremely happy or extremely disappointed with the order in which things came out, and that is a nonlinear reward.
Yeah,
yeah. Like just for instance, I had two cards. One was the gangster who gave me a +2 to my attack, +2. So when I attacked someone who had the flag, that would be a 4, but he became a 2 as a defender. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, that's not as great. But then my treasure chest would come out as a 2, but would become a 4 as a defender. So if I could beat him with the treasure chest, I'm like, great, now it's a 4.
Yeah.
Worth way more than it was originally. Perfect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting how you have that kind of dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yeah. I did remember my takeaway.
Yay.
I did it. And it's around the feedback loop, right? You have this really quick interaction, and then you go back and you try to figure out how to make it better. And just being able to have that short feedback loop of the challenge, the fight, whatever it is, you're through it, and now you do the planning again, then you go through it again. I actually tried to work on an auto battler after we were talking about it, so I tried to pre-design a game before our auto battler series.
Awesome.
Just to see if I could wrap my head around the concept. And I had a friend play test it, and Peter, and he's like, yeah man, you gotta play Tag Team. We'll get to that later. But yeah, just learning like what is interesting in that space. How many choices do you want or should you have? And where does that choice come into play?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. really, it's all about that choice and having that nice little, like, oh, I'm going to get two cards, and I get to choose. Oh, do I want the A deck or the B deck? A deck, I might be able to get more cards of the same type so I can go through more of these cards together. And you get to mulligan, too, with those decks. So, like, you have a high probability of getting more of them if they still exist.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want stronger cards that might eat up your bench more?
Yeah.
And, like, just having that simple A or B, B or C, like, it's really great.
And then immediate feedback. And
immediate feedback. How'd you do?
Yeah.
Oh, you lost again. Well, try it. Do something else. You did it wrong. Like, okay, great. Discard.
Yeah. I think you're hitting on something very important because I think feedback in particular is one place where video game auto battlers have a distinct disadvantage.
Ooh, interesting.
Compared to board game ones.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe we can talk about
being
this more.
Being able to clearly see your stuff fail or succeed.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I have played some video game auto battlers where, like, let's see, what's an example? Like, Heroes Hour, I think. That one looks really cool. But the thing is, you go into battle, and there's all these units fighting each other because you go around with these armies. And you can't keep track of what's going on.
Right.
And after the battle, you have no idea how each unit contributed to how well you did.
Yeah.
But in a board game, you are resolving the mechanics.
Yeah.
And so you have a very clear idea of how well each card in your deck is doing because, you know, you pulled out the card and you saw what it did in that battle. Mm-hmm. And that gives you feedback. And that's somewhere where I think a lot of video game auto battlers struggle, and somewhere where board game auto battlers like challengers do really well.
Yeah,
is the feedback.
Yeah, you know, it was hard. Like the first time I got my cowboy, I was really excited for the ability. Like, oh, that's a really cool thing. That'll definitely mess with people. He was on the bottom of my deck, and I never got to him, and I lost. I'm like, okay, well, how do I fix that? I drew more cards, got another cowboy.
More cowboys.
I'm like, great, throw them in there. And I tried to like do a mulligan to get another cowboy, and I think I might have gotten another one at the same time. So I got three cowboys. It's like, all right, now we have a game. And nice. And then I started winning almost every match after that.
Yeah.
But just had to triple get it tweaked cowboy. In, get it dialed in, you know?
Yeah.
That card is insane.
for being in the B rank, right, the middle rank.
Oh, mm-hmm. My goodness.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, I think any last thoughts on challengers or
what was your takeaway? I missed it.
Oh, mine was at the beginning. The tournament format.
Oh, the tournament format. Yeah, thank you.
I really enjoyed that. So with that, tune in next time as we play Magical Athlete.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.